Today on Doomed! 8chan down. After this past weekend's mass shooting in El Paso, Texas, 8chan is finally facing, well, a reckoning. Tech companies have fleed working with the site that now has links to three separate white supremacist shooters just this year alone. But can you deplatform a platform? Dale Burin, writer and author of It Came From Something Awful, How a Toxic Troll Army Accidentally Memed Donald Trump to Office, joins Doomed with me, your host Matt Binder, to discuss the history of 8chan, internet radicalization, and much, much more. As always, you can support this show at patreon.com/MattBinder. But without any further ado, Dale, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I said I wouldn't mess up your last name, and I went ahead and did it anyway. can you please give me one more time?
It's say Burin.
Burin, okay. And we had that discussion before we went live, and I was like, Burin. And we go live, and I go, Burin!
Burin is perfectly valid, so that's also fine, yeah.
All right, so Dale, thank you for joining me, and let me pull us up on the screen here.
Sure.
And let's talk about 8chan. Now, right, a lot of people really are unfamiliar with this site, and it's stunning to me, actually, because 8chan's been around for a while. And I guess before we really get into why it's in the news now, I mean, I mentioned up top that the mass shooting in El Paso, Texas this past weekend, the mass shooter posted his manifesto before he committed this horrible act that left 22 people dead and many more injured. His manifesto repeated many beliefs that are associated with the Great Replacement, which is a white supremacist belief that white people will soon be replaced in this country by immigrants.
Right.
And before we get into all that, after I just gave that summary, but before we really get into it, I think it's important to really get into what 8chan is, and even going further back than that, how it even came to be. And you wrote this great piece about 8chan called Why Does 8chan Exist at All? And I think the best way to start this conversation is for you to answer that question and give us a little bit of the history of where it came from.
Sure, I can do that. Yeah, so 8chan is a copy of another anime message board, 4chan, which was begun in 2003 by a 15-year-old kid in upstate New York. And that was a copy of a Japanese site called 2Channel. And the copy, 4chan, was really devoted to anime and sort of otaku lifestyle. And that's really kind of about dropping out. And just sometimes it's teenagers who are just really into anime. But it's this other culture of when you're 20 or 22 and you really don't have much prospects in your life and you're just going to just drop out of life and instead consume products and consume fantasy products. So at first it was about that. And by 2008, 4chan had started Anonymous, a sort of far-left hacktivist collective where they had moved philosophically from otaku culture to this sort of trolling culture and meme culture. They had largely invented memes, and there was this far-left movement that grew out of that, but then it collapsed around 2012. And by 2013, the start of incel culture, really, so they 4chan moved back into this super otaku realm where it was really about dropping out of life, spending all your time on the internet. And that's how 8chan was created. So 8chan was started by a young man who had found 4chan when he was 12 years old. And when he was in his late teens, Frederick Brennan was the founder, that's his name. He started a copy called 8chan, and Brennan had a lot of disadvantages in his life. He had a disease called osteogenesis imperfecta, which meant he was confined to a wheelchair, and he had sort of other family difficulties. And when 8chan began, he was really deep in this incel culture. He thought, oh, I'm doomed to be an incel forever. I'm doomed to live my life by consuming video games, and I'll never have a romantic partner. And that was sort of the environment in which 8chan began. And then 8chan swelled. It became the new 4chan during Gamergate, this misogynistic harassment campaign, which was really generated by all the people who had dropped out of life, all these young men who were really angry with women and angry with this idea that, oh, well, video games are my only escape. That's my only escape because I don't live in the real world, so I want video games to be misogynistic and so forth. So this harassment campaign was banned on 4chan, and 8chan swelled. It became the new 4chan, and that's how we got 8chan. And 8chan then, when 4chan and 8chan both began to move from misogyny and incel culture to far-right radicalization, 8chan became the new hotbed of the alt-right. So that's, in a nutshell, where 8chan comes from. So really out of this idea that there were a lot of young men who were really marginalized and outside of culture, really kind of pushed to the margins, and through that they became radicalized. That's really where the sort of alt-right beginnings of 8chan start.
Now let's actually get into this sort of, I guess, the ownership of 8chan gets confusing as it goes on. And in fact, all the ownership of all these Chan websites, actually, it's almost like, honestly, when you see who owns each one and how it's been these sites have been passed around, it's a little bit like incestual. Like, it's the same few people that are
weird.
So let's get into that, actually, because I think it's important to understand who owns what. And the person who created 8chan, Frederick Brennan, he doesn't have anything to do with it now, and he actually wants it. Well, he says quite publicly that he thinks it should be shut down now.
Right.
But I think there's more to it than him all of a sudden having a moral epiphany. But
yeah,
let's discuss this sort of, I guess, passing around of these websites.
Right. Yeah, it's very strange. So as 4chan tilted to the far right, when all of the incels and all these dropout otaku culture, all these young men were like, oh, conservatism and far right ideology is what now I'm into. Around 2013, 2014, during Gamergate, Moot, Christopher Poole, the founder of 4chan, left. He said it wasn't over Gamergate, but it was probably over Gamergate because the whole site kind of turned on him. And so this was the 15-year-old kid that had started it in 2003. He left, and he went to Google. He works now for Google. We don't know what he does. I asked Google, and they just said, no, we won't tell you what he does. That was their only response to me. And the person that took over, Hiro Nishimura, was the original founder of 2Channel. So the person that 4chan had copied. So he went and now is running 4chan, and he still runs 4chan. And he had been kicked out, or rather had lost the control of 2Channel, because there was this rather elaborate scandal in Japan, which had to do with bribery and controlling posts on 2Channel.
Right.
And 2Channel was even maybe in some ways more significant than 4chan is in our culture. It was a little more mainstream, but it too was full of otaku in Japan, and it was full of radicalizing otaku that were also, for the same sort of sociological reasons, going to the far right. And so this was part of the scandal, and that's so he lost control. He went to go run 4chan. At the same time, all of these people angry over Gamergate, all these 4chan users moving to 8chan, were swelling Frederick Brennan's site, and 8chan became super significant. But the problem is, weirdly, Chans don't make money. They lose a lot of money.
Right.
So Frederick Brennan was in this position where he's 20 years old. He's scraping by on this like gig economy. He doesn't have any money. He's trying to be independent. But he told me, well, I was about to go on disability and stay there for the rest of my life. I needed a way out. So he's like, I want to use this idea, this popularity of 8chan, even though I'm losing all this money. And so enter the server administrator for 2Channel, a guy named Jim Watkins, a sort of far-right Army veteran who lives in the Philippines who had been running 2-channel servers and was the person that in this chaos of the scandal at 2-channel had stolen 2-channel from Nishimura. So Jim Watkins now has control of 2-channel. 2-channel makes a lot of money because it doesn't host images. So Watkins, flush with money from 2-channel, says, I'll buy 8-channel from you. Not because it's profitable, but because I think it's fun and because my son loves to use 8chan. So now Watkins owns 2-channel and 8chan. Nishimura, the original owner of 2-channel, owns 4chan. I'm sorry. And then and moved
you're,
Christopher Poole.
You're right.
He works for Google, yeah. The one mistake there is I said 2chan. There's a 2chan is actually another variant. It's 2-channel.
Right. And just so we can clear that up, 2chan was actually started by the guy who now owns 4chan after 2-channel was stolen from him, and then he later sold off 2chan.
Yeah, so it's this complicated history, but it's only like 3 or 4 players, right? And it's like the right. same owners, right? So
right.
This is significant in the sense that people are like, oh, if we shut down 8chan, oh, they'll just go to another chan. Well, actually, it turns out it's very hard to run a chan. They lose a lot of money. And of course, server companies ban them, as is happening with 8chan now. So the idea that this will happen is more difficult than I think people imagine.
Right. It is interesting, though, to think about the idea of a platform being deplatformed, because it is different, I think. And I don't know if I want to get into this conversation this early in the conversation before we get to what's going on 8chan even more. But yeah, let's hold off on this part.
Okay.
So let's discuss now. So Frederick Brennan, now that we know the family tree of the Chans.
Right.
So Frederick Brennan starts 8chan in 2013, but first actually he ran a chan before he started 8chan. And
yes.
I think this is important too to know about because
WizardChan.
Right. And I think it's important to know this too because when we talk about these different types of, far right online extremists and reactionaries, there is overlap between them all. And I think a lot of times people who just study, the sort of mainstream white supremacists, they pay attention to the David Dukes in the KKK, and then they pay attention to the new school of the white supremacists like Richard Spencer. They miss a lot of
right.
the things that happened online outside of the public view that sort of connects it all and really
yeah.
I think moved it from the David Dukes to the Richard Spencers. And
right.
and one of those things are this culture of incels and,
yes.
People who are sort of angry that they're virgins, but they're pushing women away anyway. Sort of like
right.
the men going their own way people. So let's talk about that part of Frederick Brennan's life really quick.
Right. So Brennan really began in this. He was sort of the center also of this burgeoning incel culture, which had occurred first on 4chan and then on a section of it called R9K, Robot 9000, which was supposed to be a nice optimistic part, but it came full of people who were sad and alone. And then together they convinced themselves there was sort of this groupthink that they're like, oh, well, if I'm sad and alone, I'll be that way forever. I'm doomed to be that way. I'm born into a society. And it was sort of like a social Darwinist idea, which is still very popular among the alt-right, this idea that, oh, we're beta males. We're doomed to never get women and be on the bottom and always lose this sort of hierarchical competition. So Brennan was in that R9K world. And then Moot thought it was so sad and depressing, he cut the board. He said it shouldn't exist on 4chan. And at that point, Brennan and the group start new chans. They start Wizard Chan, which is based on this Japanese joke that if you're over 30, you become a wizard. If you're over 30 and you're a virgin, you become a wizard. That's the joke. So Wizard Chan, he described to me, was even more toxic. It was even more of a groupthink. Things got worse, and they said, oh, if you have one friend, then you're faking being a wizard. So it was just sort of, and eventually R9K was reinstated. It still exists now. But WizardChan was also, before even Gamergate happened on 4chan and then moved to 8chan, WizardChan was already harassing the same game developer in 2013 before Gamergate really got started. So, I mean, to me, I argue in the article in the book, it's really like you mentioned, there's the Richard Spencer kind of like armchair crank, fake intellectual Nazis, and then there's the traditional David Duke neo-Nazis. To me, there's this new set of disenfranchised, marginalized young men who, because of, for economic reasons, right, they're like, they've dropped out of life and they're sort of in this otaku lifestyle, which then deepens into an incel lifestyle. And then between that economic idea that like, oh, they don't have any access to fulfilling jobs or really good access to education or adequate housing, stuff that a lot of young people, a lot of people just have to deal with in the U.S. now. That combined with like, it's so easy to just drop out and play video games all day. That's just, our culture makes it really easy to do that. That ends up pushing people into 4chan and 8chan and into these realms. And then they cling on to far right ideology as a way out. That's right. Their like, right. They think, oh, well, that'll be my way to bootstrap myself out.
Right.
And Brennan was really at the center of that before Gamergate happened. And then before 8chan happened. And we see it just sort of still happening, that those forces are there. It's really kind of a new set of far-right people. It's different than the David Duke set or the Richard Spencer set.
Right. And I sort of, you know, this is more of a conversation, I guess, about, you know, the mind of someone who takes it the next step and starts mass murdering people. But there's definitely, you know, I know there's a whole debate about, you know, whether it's a mental health issue and whether, you know, it's without a doubt a gun issue. That's the number one problem, you know,
sure.
Hands down with that.
Right.
And then, you know, you have Republicans and conservatives trying to blame video games.
Right.
And, you know, there's, to me, I think you could blame for sure mental health and sort of video game culture, not the video games themselves. And obviously, this all goes back to toxic masculinity as well, on what gets people in this sort of mindset, not the mass shooting mindset, but the mindset of the people on 8chan and 4chan who are miserable and then become radicalized by people who, you know, not saying Richard Spencer and David Duke specifically, but people like them who see these people who are like this, depressed, down on their luck, and view them as, hey, these people are prime meat for my ideology and for me to bring them into the fold.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's very true. I mean, to the extent that it's mental health, right? I mean, I'm sure some of these people have mental health issues and we'll never really know. But, like, the idea that the New Zealand shooter, right, a lot of them appeared like ideologues, right? They're like, this is, I'm fighting for ideology. They didn't actually seem unhinged, for the exception that they became horrible mass murderers. So like, it's very frightening, this idea that they're sort of radicalized just through the ideology, and that makes them want to kill people. Sources that I've interviewed, people that have fallen into incel culture, even though they didn't go out and kill people, they describe it as like, that's how I felt.
Right.
Because of what happened, like, I felt like, oh, I never got out. I never interacted with people except on these websites. And what they convinced me, it's just like, they just convinced me that we're superfluous people in the bottom of society and we're worthless. And the only thing that can happen is that we should just kill ourselves, or we should go out and kill other people because we're doomed. Right. And like, you see that group thing happen with like Thinspo or whatever, where like people who inspired to be anorexic, they all get together and encourage each other. But it was happening with incels really badly. So it really is like part of their, like part of the ideology, which is like, it's that social Darwinist idea where like they convince themselves that it's life is this cool kind of video game style hierarchy, right? And then, of course, the other component, like you say, is that there are these sort of, after Gamergate, this really occurred during Gamergate, where there was this power vacuum when Christopher Poole left 4chan. He was like a leader. And all of these YouTube personalities popped up instead and said, I'll lead you for Gamergate. And they were profiting off the ad clicks, and they kind of became fake dads. And they were like, oh, well, all these young men who are raising themselves online, I'll tell you how to pull yourselves up by the bootstraps. And you're right, right? Like, you're right to be angry at women. You're right to hate feminism. And you're right that society is this cruel hierarchy. And I'll tell you how to climb away to the top, because I know you're doomed to the bottom, right? Really unhealthy stuff.
Right.
So, and it's like scratching a mosquito bite, right? It's like a terrible cure, right? And it just is this like form of hopeless hope where they're like, oh, okay. And then it just feels worse because like what could be more alienating than suddenly deciding you're a Nazi? It makes you more alienated, right? And that's right. Then they get in this position where either they kill themselves because the boards were full of suicides, or they end up doing even worse stuff, which is happening now.
Right, right. And, you know, on this show before, I've spoken many times about sort of the type of person that falls for this sort of thing, really. You know, the type of person who is susceptible to white supremacists and MRAs and anyone who profits really off of far-right ideology and hate. And, right. You know, I don't bring this up to feel bad for them. You know, these people, I'm not saying, oh, it's, you know, mental health issue, they're depressed, and that's how they get pulled into this world. I'm not saying that as a way to say, oh, so they're not responsible for their actions. No, absolutely not.
Right.
There's no pity for them in that sense.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, if we want to sort of solve the problem, A, if we want to fix the mass shootings, obviously you got to do something about the guns. But,
right.
You know, we also see that while not as many people died as they do in mass shootings, white supremacists will find a way to kill, as, you know, Charlottesville wasn't a gun. You know, someone died,
yes,
and there was no gun involved.
Yes.
So if we want to stop that, we need to even look deeper and see what's going on here. Not to, you know, again, not to pity them or feel sorry for them, but to say, hey, these people are being radicalized. They wouldn't be like this either way. They wouldn't be like this any other way, I should say. But
right,
for the fact that ideologues who, the true believers, who, might I add, aren't the ones that end up usually committing these things, these heinous
right
crimes, because that's how you know they're not the ones who are, who have the mental issue, health issues, or have the, I just got radicalized issues. No, these are the real, these are the people who are the real bad eggs. These are the ones who there are no, there is no saving.
Right.
You know, the people who are preyed upon them, we got to figure out how to make sure they're not scapegoating immigrants, scapegoating feminists, scapegoating
right
marginalized groups. And that way, you know, we get rid of the hatred from, I would say, like, I don't know what percentage, but there's a lot more of those sort of brainwashed types than there are the true believers, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. Yeah, certainly, like, breaking apart the problem and trying to understand the roots of it does not mean in any way, like, I have no sympathy for the men that go out and actually kill people because they've been brainwashed online, right? Like, they're, the idea that they would do that, I mean, the sources that I speak to, right, it's people who are in that position, and most of them don't. Most of them live really sad, miserable lives, and they just watch, yeah, I mean, they spend their lives online, and then they watch their, Brennan told me he witnessed 5 or 6 suicides on his message boards, like, that, like, personally, friends of his were like, oh, well, today's the day, right? So it's, the ones that get the press attention are these, of course, and the ones that sort of quietly kill themselves or live these sort of miserable, closeted lives, like, those are the ones that obviously we don't pay attention to, which is sadder. And I think you're also right that really the people profiting off it, right, whether that's YouTube addicting kids to watching endless YouTube videos, or whether that's the men on YouTube who are selling them this social Darwinist ideology and sort of convincing them that they're doomed to be on the bottom, or this convincing them of this very cruel way of thinking, right, those men deserve the blame to some extent.
Oh, for sure. Right. Now, let's actually get a little, I know we've touched on it a bunch of times already, but I think we should get deeper into this, because this is where I think the real turn happened. And I just think it's you'll agree, because it's crystal clear. But I really want to delve into this here, the Gamergate aspect of it. Because right. This is when 8chan goes from being just like the other Chans and just being another place full of shit posters and assholes. And yes, extremists, yeah. but you know, a group that probably is in the same numbers as the other assholes on the site. Nothing
right.
as over the top and overwhelming as we see with 8chan now.
Right. Yeah, Gamergate. That was this peculiar turning point where 2013, this is when Anonymous collapses and 4chan's culture really turns back towards super otakuism, right? Where it's even more extreme. The despair is even more extreme than when it was first existing in 2005, right? The whole idea was that, like, that youth culture was about competitive transgression. And every time, every year, you think, oh, it's not going to get worse. But somehow it gets worse every year. Except for this weird exception where they became politically engaged with Anonymous and they're like, oh, we're going to have agency in our lives. We're going to self-improve. But after that collapses, we really get this intense despair that becomes the incel communities. And then around that, Gamergate occurs where they start harassing this female game developer. A bitter ex writes a screed about her. And then suddenly there's all of these Chan users on 4chan and 8chan saying, oh, we're going to harass this woman. And really like an absurd amount of virulent hatred just focused on this woman and her defenders. And after that, what occurs after they move to 8chan is they realize they're a political coalition, that they have a shared set of values. They're like, oh, well, we all resent women so much because we don't interact with them and imagine we never will, that we hate them and we hate feminism. And their other the other thing that they sort of coalesced politically around was, as the left was moving towards this idea, which was also an internet-cultivated idea, that kind of cis white males were at the top of a pyramid of privilege, and then everyone else was sort of the idea of politics was to lift everyone up to that same level, which is a valid idea in many ways. But the idea that there was this set of marginalized young men on the Chans who were generally cis white males, and they said, oh, we're on the margins. How dare you, right? We don't want that kind of politics. And they sort of deeply resent it, where the left was going. And that really pushed them to the right. So that's 2014 is Gamergate. 2015 is Trump's campaign. So by that point, all of the Gamergate vloggers, Mike Cernovich, Milo Yiannopoulos, Sargon of Akkad, right? All of those guys that were profiting off YouTube, really like hucksters, they all turned and they said, oh no, well, Gamergate's over. It's been a year. We're going to turn and we're going to campaign for Trump, right? And we know how that goes, which is, right, like Yiannopoulos, and Bannon hires Yiannopoulos. And then Yiannopoulos' tour, which Ben gives him $1 million for a tour, that ends in all these riots and stabbings and shootings, and that ends in Charlottesville. So, I mean, a crazy story. And it's crazy that Gamergate, which we thought was sort of cultural trash in a way, we thought, oh, that's so stupid that that horrible harassment campaign happened. Let's forget about it, right? Now everyone's forced to talk about it because it became this coalition of political coalition of like men from their 40s down to their teens that felt deeply marginalized and had moved to the far right.
Right, right. And the interesting thing there is that, you know, again, we see something going on where, well, first of all, one interesting thing is that Frederick Brennan, has admitted, and he said it himself, that, you know, 8chan wasn't really anything back in 2013. It maybe received like 100 posts a day, if that.
Right.
And then it went from that to, you know, these Gamergate people who were kicked off 4chan for being too terrible for 4chan even. Needed a place to go, and he saw this as an opportunity to grow 8chan, make some money, and he said that it went from 100 posts a day to 4,000 posts an hour. And, you know, I think what we see here, and then let's segue into what I was going to say before that popped into my mind, you know, with the Milo Yiannopouloses, the Mike Cernoviches, the Sargons. You know, what we're seeing here is that people who had the clear mindset, who were not the type we were just talking about 5 minutes ago, they saw this as a grift. They saw this as a way to A, make money, and then B, get some people on our side. And right. It's what set off, I mean, this is what sets off people almost every time. I mean, if you look at anyone who's been sort of radicalized, it always, almost always, I would say, starts with a grift. Someone who sees an opportunity to A, make money, or B, stroke their ego. And right. They use these people. And these people are used. And we're going to get into another aspect of 8chan coming down that ties into this with QAnon, but I don't want to go there quite yet. So, so what I want to do now is just bring up Frederick Brannon, because he's out there now talking about shutting that 8chan should be shut down. He despises it. He wants nothing to do with it. He wishes that the Jim Watkins, the American pig farmer living in the Philippines, shut it down and listen to him. He talks about this guy like he's a terrible guy. He worked with him. He apparently was shacked up in a condominium that he had rented from him. And apparently this guy would treat him terrible or something. Right. I feel bad for him that he had to deal with that. But at the same time, you know, he's not an innocent party in this. This is a guy who, during Gamergate, was warned many times that, hey, people are being harassed and doxxed on your website. He didn't care. He openly supported it. It's not like he just provided a home for it either and tried to moderate it. He openly supported these people. He openly supported the things going on his site. He did not do a very good job moderating when child pornography started running rampant on his website. Right. And, I mean, to me, to top it all off, the part where you don't get to come back from, that's right, something that you could think of that's even worse than letting harassment and doxing go, is the fact that this guy went ahead and wrote a pro-eugenics piece for the Daily Stormer.
Right. So, yeah. When I spoke to him first in 2018, I was surprised that he said, I want nothing to do with the Chans. And it was a toxic environment that he had been really suckered into the groupthink, the incel think. And he was still working for 2chan, at the 2channel at the time, for Watkins. And I do, in some sense, understand that to a certain extent, that I would believe part of that, that he's 20 years old and he's suckered into this like many of the other incels I spoke to. But he did make these wrong choices. He made these horrible choices as he went forward. And like, to me, the article, like that central idea that like, I asked him, I was like, you know, do you regret Gamergate now that you realize you're out of this group thing? He says, I can't say that I regret it, because it got me out of this horrible situation where, like, I needed to use it. It was, like, very – I was like, I can't – you know, like, he's like, I had to be shrewd and use this thing. And it was obviously the wrong moral choice, right?
Right.
And I'll let people, you know, in that position where, you know, you're disabled, you break bones very easily, and you're about to go on disability, right? And you're like, what choice? Do I make the right choice or do I make the shrewd choice? I mean, awful, right? Like, terrible circumstances to begin with. And on top of that, he says that his father had really had him and his siblings to collect the benefit checks. So he was sort of from this place that that was his family situation. So every time a reporter would come to him, he would come and give this message where he says, this happened to me and I want genetic testing. So I asked him about this Daily Storm article and he's like, I wanted to get the message out. That was the only one that would take it. But obviously, right? You know, he's obviously right. That's, you know, that was the wrong choice. And it's insane to advocate eugenics. So he's like, to me, this idea that he is from this difficult background and he fell into all of the, and he made all of these bad choices, right? Like, I will judge him certainly, right? And I will say that it's wrong. But to me, it's like beyond the judgment, right? These factors that sort of created this, it's like beyond who is to blame, right? Like the idea that he's in this like horrible situation and this is how 8chan is created is to me the like the mind boggling part. What,
right? You know, right wingers bring up all the time, you know, like, oh, there's, you know, there was the Christchurch shooter who posted on 8chan, was live streaming on Facebook and people post murders on Instagram. And why don't people clamor, you know, say those sites should be shut down? And, you know, even if you even want to bring in Moot and 4chan, what I think the difference is between Facebook and I know the difference is between those mainstream social networking websites and even 4chan with Moot is that these people didn't set up these sites for that purpose. And they sort of created a monster they didn't mean to create. And then they went ahead and did things to, you know, they tried at the very least and continue to try in the case of the mainstream social networks to do something about that. And that to me is the main difference. Like the purpose of Facebook, the purpose of Instagram, the purpose of Twitter isn't the bad stuff. The purpose is the reason they created the site and they try to do something about the bad stuff. Moot didn't create 4chan to be this terrible, horrible place. It became that. And, you know, whether he tried his darndest to really to fix it, he certainly did more than what Brennan did. And the fact is that 8chan was started to be a terrible place. Like, he purposely wanted these people to create the culture of 8chan. And to me, that's just where it gets to the point where it's like, you know, no matter where you are now, which I personally think it's a thing where he's just portraying this sort of moral clarity now just to be done with it. To me, that's the biggest difference. And in fact, I what sort of cemented my belief in this is that one of the programs that Brennan went on to discuss wanting 8chan shut down in the wake of this El Paso shooting was the Kill Stream, which is hosted by Ralph, who runs the Ralph Retort, which is a major far-right reactionary show. The guy was one of the original major players of covering Gamergate from a pro-Gamergate perspective. He was someone who was jailed for a while after attacking a police officer in one of his reactionary rages. This is a far-right guy that Frederick Brennan decided to go talk to. And again, I'm actually not someone who is against going on shows that are, you know, far-right if you have the opposite opinion in a sense to shut them down, to shut them up, to possibly show. But he's not the guy to do that. So if in his case, he shouldn't have gone on that show because he's not in that position to do that.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah. I mean, 8chan is also different in the sense that it's inherently irresponsible because unlike 4chan, which is strictly controlled, moderated what board, Moot or whoever runs 4chan decides what boards there are. The idea that you can start your own board like on Reddit or something on 8chan created a real rat's nest of really illegal content of all types. And it was largely unmoderated. That was partially the appeal of 4chan, but as 4chan went on, Moot moderated it better and better, though it was obvious from the beginning that people were drawn to it because it had very poor moderation. But yes, 8chan always had really poor moderation. And so the idea of running 8chan all these years, morally irresponsible, morally wrong, right? The idea that you would invite Gamergate over there and as a harassment campaign and say, you can do this here, right? Obviously the wrong decision. So, yeah, I mean, I do think he has a lot to answer for.
I just remembered, by the way, just to bring up another thing that Ralph Retort is known for after, you know, being in the way, you know, being that Brennan went on this show with his new morality, is that this is the guy who got banned from the Wall Street Journal covered this. It was a major story late last year in 2018. He was the guy who was raising money for, I believe it was St. Jude's Children's Hospital, but doing it by monetizing anti-Semitic hate speech via YouTube's Super Chat feature. So he was having his audience pay money to send YouTube Super Chats using, you know, the K word slur for Jewish people, using the N word, saying horrible, terrible. And he was, you know, this is a thing they were known for. This was something he encouraged. And they got kicked off of YouTube for it. And what they do basically is, because then they come out and say that YouTube's against St. Jude's Children's Hospital, which, I mean, is ridiculous. I mean, that's the whole point, right? They do it under the guise of raising money so that when they do get banned, they can turn it around and say that we were trying to do a nice thing and that the people who did something about our channel are actually the bad guys.
Wow. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty awful. Yeah. I mean, to me, Brennan's anger right now and his and how he's sort of vehemently denouncing 8chan, it's a mix of this thing that he told me a year ago when he's like, I, you know, the Chans are toxic. I live this new conservative life, by the way. Like, it's sort of like he goes to church, he found religion, and he says that, like, that's his new life now. But it's a mix of that and being really angry at Jim Watkins, at the guy that bought a show. It's sort of like a disgruntled employee thing.
Right.
Probably fairly. Watkins really sounds like an awful nightmare, right? Watkins, since he bought the site, and he bought it in exchange for a job, right? He said, Brennan, I'll give you a job at my company programming for 2Channel and 8chan. In exchange, I'll have 8chan. And Brennan just described to me all of these crazy, horrible experiences working for Watkins, who just sounds totally unhinged. And in fact, you know, he posts YouTube videos as well, which are totally unhinged. So it's sort of this combo of Brennan's like, I hate 8chan now because I hate Watkins, right? Like,
right.
He's like, I'm really disgruntled. And he said things on Twitter where he's like, you know, I would still run it. I could run it well. It's still like, it wasn't that bad, which I don't think is, you know, I don't know how repentant he is, right? The idea is that he would run it well if he had control of it. So to me, that's somewhat questionable stance.
Right. So he's saying that if he took control of it now, he wouldn't shut it down, even though he's claiming he wants to shut down now.
Yes. He thinks that Watkins' stewardship of it really has left it unmoderated in a sense, but you know, in 2014 when he ran it before, when was it that it wasn't moderated then? It wasn't moderated, obviously not.
Now let's talk about current 8chan, the 8chan of the Jim Watkins era of 8chan. I mean this Jim Watkins guy is extremely sketchy. I'm sure many people would agree with that. He lives in the Philippines. He looks like someone who would live in the Philippines for reasons that I guess would be just allegedly. If you know where I'm getting with that. He seems to, well, he was a military guy who left the military because his early internet porn sites took off.
He was sort of like a technician. He kind of was into electronics in the army. He got trained that way,
right?
And then he was making porn sites.
His big site was a website called Asian Bikini Bar, which apparently was in, you know, during the late 90s and early aughts. Apparently Japan had very strict vulgarity laws or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
And so he was able to get around it by obviously not being in Japan. And while people in Japan couldn't host or create this content, they could still visit it. So he created Japanese-centric pornographic content and hosted it in America and became very rich from a Japanese audience.
Yeah. And of course, that's also why he was hosting 2Channel. Was that 2Channel was running afoul of the same laws. So it had to be hosted in the Philippines. And his unsavory company was happy to host it.
Right. And then he started recently. Well, it's since been inactive. But following, I believe, the Christchurch shooting. We'll get into the shootings in a second. But this guy. He started his own news site to sort of, you know, in the same way that, you know, Trumpers, you know, Trumpian people started their own sort of alternative news sites to fight back against the fake news against them. This guy started a site called Goldwater. Right. I wonder where he got that name from.
Right.
And he started creating videos with where he was hosted along with these random revolving cast of Filipino women who discussed the news with him. And it's all in a way that basically tries to take off, you know, it's very pro-Trump. It's very pro-far-right. And it's basically the purpose seems to be to try to get off, try to get any sort of a flack that 8chan and his websites are getting, trying to sort of get it off of him.
Yes. Whenever he creates a YouTube video, it looks like an Adult Swim show, right? Like it looks like, right? It looks like, I mean, it's just these amazing production decisions where, you know, when he's apologizing for the massacres that come off his site, he's got this huge Ben Franklin like looming behind him or whatever. Yeah, so he makes these kind of unhinged videos where he does not come off well or even particularly sane, his YouTube president. And Brennan, of course, has told me a series of anecdotes about him where he is very erratic and like Brennan had to endure these like racist rants where he said, you know, he said that there was this, he told me this one story where they were at an office and he got very angry and he lectured all of the Philippine staff that he understood why the British and the colonial powers would cut off the Philippines' arms because they were so lazy. And then he started screaming at everyone. So stories like this, and Brandon eventually quit because he said that, Watkins stormed up in the middle of the night and started screaming at him while he was just in bed covered by a blanket. And that was the last straw. So there's this idea that Watkins has never been particularly sane, I guess, or at least like particularly like a good manager. So Brandon also described how really 2chan, which was stolen in a sense, we don't know the details, but it was very public feud that Nishimura claims that it was stolen. Like at the time, Nishimura was DDoSing his own site. He was like, this was also like they were fighting publicly, like through hacker feuds to get it back.
Right.
So 2channel, once it was stolen, once it was taken over in this weird aggressive way, was his only source of income. According to Brennan. And so he had these Goldwater, all these other sites. These were like insane projects that never made any money. And 8chan is one of those. It's just one of those sites that, one of those crazy projects that just loses money and causes huge problems for him. So that's the why 8chan exists, which is also totally bizarre.
Can I just say, it is stunning to me how dumb these Chan owners are. Who would hand over both the hosting like the full content of this website and the domain name to someone you have no sort of connection with who's just promising to host it for free? Like, what a dumb move. Like,
yeah,
wait, you
right.
know, it's like handing over the keys to your, like, if you were running a brick and mortar business, would you hand over the keys to your front door to some stranger who claims he'll fund it without any sort of contract or anything like that signed? I mean, what a weird thing to do. I'd rather, if I couldn't afford my website and someone said they'll just freely host it with no sort of monetary exchange for me, I would be like, I think I'll just let my site shut down. Thank you, buddy. I wouldn't trust that.
Yeah, it's very weird. There was a contract between Brennan and Watkins, but that essentially, you know, gave him rights to the entire site.
Not a good one.
Yeah, right. And like Nishimura, like, he was famous for never responding to lawsuits and sort of being a really sloppy business owner. So this idea that like he just accidentally lost control of this incredibly lucrative site, it's like very bizarre, right? It's not like, it's very sloppy all around.
I mean, he's got the 2channel guy, you got all this money and you have problems in Japan. Listen, you leave the country. I mean, run the site outside of Japan. I mean, and the interesting thing, though, and this is not, you know, maybe a bad example to the solution is just leaving the country. But, you know, I think some people would think that, you know, Jim Watkins is safe in the Philippines and that's why he's there. But apparently the Filipino government is not pleased at all that they're stuck with the guy who runs 8chan.
Yeah, there are extradition treaties and so forth with the Philippines. So as far as I understand it, so it's not really, besides the Japanese law, I guess, that it gets around, there's not really, it's not like they're there hiding. So to me, I think you're right that right now the Philippine government is not happy at all, and they are going to put a great deal of pressure on him if he really tries to start the site again with this like zero moderation approach where he is really sort of embracing this idea that all these horrible things on it. Yeah, like it's not going to exist in any in that form anymore, it would be my guess.
Right. So just this year, I guess to bring it full circle now, just this year we've had three white supremacist shootings where the shooters were 8chan posters, where they posted their intent beforehand, posted a manifesto beforehand that clearly showcased their white supremacist ideology. I believe, I don't know if all three of them did, but I know two of them for sure, the Christchurch shooter and the El Paso Walmart shooter, specifically espoused the great replacement white supremacist theory.
So did the synagogue Poway.
The synagogue Poway.
The Tree of Life synagogue shooter as well. He was a literal copycat. He's just like,
right. Yeah. Yeah, I think I get him confused actually with that one that came. Like, this is sad that we're confused. I could even say this, but
I know there's
with,
so many
with the one who did the garlic festival shooting.
That's just another art white personality that we don't have a Chan connection for. But again, a social Darwinist young man fits the profile right, and he recommended these social Darwinist / proto neo Nazi literature. So. Right. Yeah, I mean, the list goes on. Like, I list 4 or 5 in my article, and then 6 more. And then, you know, in my book, I list more, and it's like 19, 20, right? It's really an epidemic of far-right shooters.
So when someone posts this stuff on 8chan, when they post their manifesto or their intent to shoot somebody, what is the reaction of the current-day 8chan community?
I mean, they love it for the most part. They are exultant, right? They're either nihilistic or sort of deeply unhappy with themselves. You know, I mean, the way how deeply miserable in your life do you have to be to celebrate that, right?
Right.
And so it's kind of clear how much their lives suck and how much they suck. But that's their reaction, that for the most part, they're exultant. There's a few who are like, oh, well, this isn't good for promoting our far-right ideology. This isn't good for our goals. Right. And then a few people are like, oh, no, 8chan's going to get shut down because I spent all my time here. Right? Like, that's their reaction.
Right.
Not a human reaction.
Right. And it seems like, actually, I wouldn't be surprised if not only does like the rhetoric on there in general sort of push someone deeper into this this hole where they end up, you know, becoming what they become and go out and commit these horrible acts. But it wouldn't surprise me if the actual reaction to the shooting, the sort of gamification of it, where they sort of have this kill count where the more these shooters kill, the higher, on the totem pole they become. Like, you know, in many aspects, you know, you become a legend to these 8chaners,
right?
Based on how many more people you kill than previous mass shooters.
Yeah, I write about this in my book a lot. You know, Republicans have been blaming video games, and their scapegoating of them is obviously wrong. There is a component that is the video game component, which is this idea that if you live your entire life behind a screen, there's this sort of fantasy of stepping through the screen, which is combined with what they consume as fantasy as escapist fantasy products, which are male violent fantasies that are power fantasies, right? The power fantasies of action films, the power fantasies of video games, And these are all violent power fantasies, right, that are sold to young men. And why are they sold? Why are they so popular? Because obviously these men are powerless, right? It's an old trick, right? Old capitalist trick where you sell the power fantasy to the powerless. So this idea that they replicate that, that they replicate Doom, the video games, the action films, and they love it. And they're like, oh, I'm so miserable. And I've been spending my entire life consuming male power fantasies because I'm powerless. Well, why don't I just kill myself by reenacting it, right? Like, it's incredibly screwed up, but this is where we are.
Right. I just want to say as an aside, I can't thank you enough for getting the name of the show in there as much as possible.
Oh, well. Oh, right. Oh.
Right, right. It's listen, the reason the show has the name, because literally I was like, you know, wouldn't it be something to just literally call it what all this stuff I cover on this show is?
Doomed.
It's doomed. It's
doomed indeed.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, right. I guess a good way to wrap this up is to, well, two ways actually to wrap this up. And one is to sort of talk about where 8chan is now. And that's that it is down, at least via the domain name 8ch, which is 8ch.net, which is their domain name. You're not able to get on there. However, I believe if you go directly to their IP address, they're up. But that's not probably going to last for long, because they've since lost their DDoS protection, which was when Cloudflare dropped them.
Right.
And then they went to Epic, the domain company that's very welcoming to right-wing fringe sites. They've hosted Gab. They've hosted the Daily Stormer when both those sites have lost their providers and were deplatformed. They went to their DDoS protection site, Bitmitigation. But then Bitmitigation lost their service provider when they found out about 8chan being on there, Voxility. So Voxility cuts them off, which actually brings down Deadly Stormer and all the sites Bitmitigation is hosting.
Wonderful. Great.
And then then finally, Epic comes back, gets Bitmitigation back up, and says they actually will also not host 8chan. So, you know, Deadly Stormer, okay, 8chan, that takes it a step too far, apparently, because 8chan actually shuts them down. But they're still hosting their domain name. So the question now is, what happens to 8chan? Can you deplatform a platform? And I don't know, because, see, it's deplatforming has clearly worked in every way that we've seen so far.
Yes.
When it comes to Milo Yiannopoulos. And, you know, let's use Milo as a perfect example, because I think he's the shining star of the examples.
The deplatforming paragon.
Right. He was a major alt-right star, a major star on the right. He was rapidly gaining a fan. It was a fan base. It wasn't just like he was an ideologue. He had a fan base. He was like a celebrity to them. Yes. And he gets cut off of Twitter. And he loses that ability to be an asshole to people. And, you know, why I say he had a fan base and he had like a celebrity, like a cult around him as a pro thing before, it actually might have been, in general, the thing that hurt him more than some of these others like Alex Jones. Because, you know, Milo didn't have that strong ideological fan base. He had people who wanted to see him be an asshole to others. And Twitter's the perfect platform for that. Facebook, you can't really do that on Facebook the way that sort of site is set up.
Right.
So he gets the platform of Twitter, and he's a nobody. No one cares about Milo anymore. And it works, because that's sort of what deplatforming is all about, removing someone from that sort of, I guess, bubble that exists on each separate network or website. But see, what I think is that it's different when it comes to a website, because in a sense, they own the platform they're on. And while you can continue to go after their service providers, they'll always find somebody, because they're able to set up that platform somewhere. Now, it'll be a lot harder, and the site will certainly go down and not be a stable constant that they were when they were on Cloudflare or a service like it.
Right.
But for the platform itself, it's sort of like when there's a will, there's a way. And they will find a way to get through on the dark web, maybe. I know someone already set up a, and this is funny, this is Kelly Wild from the Daily Beast reported on this. Someone set up an unofficial 8chan on the ZeroNet platform, which is basically like a peer-to-peer hosting service.
Right.
And because it was an unofficial platform, you don't know who exactly is peering this and what they're sort of putting in the 8chan package. And what it turns out was in there, to people who thought it was the official way to access 8chan now, was child pornography.
Of course, right.
So I don't really know what happens to 8chan now. I'm not saying they're not, you know, completely done to try to say we can't do anything. Clearly, the tech companies are doing something that's going to hurt 8chan's ability to radicalize people. But it's not down and out like, say, banning a individual far-right personality off a major social network. Sort of keep someone out of the atmosphere of that world.
Yeah, that's a very fair distinction. I actually hadn't thought of that difference. That's a good point. To me, I think 8chan, there will be enough pressure on it that it will be very difficult to run it. That the unique circumstances of running this website that loses money, and that now governments are going to be very put a lot of pressure on Watkins to either control or moderate or not post at all. I think it might be so much trouble that they might end up abandoning the project. Though if it does return, it will be heavily monitored by the FBI more so than ever. I think that between the Philippine government and the U.S. government, Watkins will be forced to moderate it in a way or change it in some way. I would be very surprised if it returns more or less as it is once it figures out its like DDoS protection. Though you're right. I mean, they will break it up. That the people that were there will go to the dark web and go to Discord servers. But deplatforming works, as you say. It doesn't change the fundamental problem, right? Like the fundamental forces that creates this subgroup of people, they're still going to be there. They're still going to be far-right fascists, though the Poway killer, he was 19 years old, right? He was a kid, pretty incompetent kid, that just did a copycat shooting. So are less people like that, are less teenagers going to get suckered into this world if 8chan goes away? I think so. I think that it will be helpful, even though those underlying problems won't be addressed. I mean, the Chans in their history, this happens all the time. It happened like in 2004, it happened in when they went from 4chan to 8chan, that was like the fifth time the group had been like, this Chan is too moderated. We want a worse one. But the problem was that most of the time those sites eventually collapsed.
Right.
That almost all of them collapsed because it was incredibly difficult to actually run them.
Right.
So this quirk, historical quirk of Watkins running 8chan, I think this era is almost over.
Right, right. I agree with you on the fact that, you know, it's, and I'm glad you brought it up that, you know, the reason why these tech services, shutting them down is important is because you want to make them want to give up, because that's how you'll deplatform a platform. It's not the same. Like Milo can't force his way back on Twitter in the way that 8chan can force their way back on some other web service and get their site back up and running. But if you make it hard enough for them, they might just give up. I do sort of think that the Poway killer, I get that he's young, definitely. Not a kid in the sense that, you know, shooting someone, you know, right from wrong at that point. But I get what you're saying, though. But let's end it on this and sort of, because can't have a conversation about 8chan without quickly mentioning QAnon. To me, and this is something I noticed right away, and I think a lot of people, you know, didn't really think about this at first, but I think everyone's sort of, it's come to everyone's attention now. Without 8chan, this QAnon cult that's come out of this website because of one person who calls them, or a group of people who call themselves Q, we have no idea who this Q is, they no longer have a way to confirm without 8chan. They have no way to confirm an official message from Q. Now, for those who aren't aware, Q posts a message on 8chan with something called a trip code attached. And now the messages he or she or they post are the only ones that have this sort of code connected to it. So they could so they're his followers or her followers can confirm that this is indeed an official message from Q.
Right.
And listen, I know that at this point QAnon will go on and on without a leader because they're already going on without, you know, Q has disappeared for a month at a time and the cult has only grown. Right. But what I think is going to happen and what makes it dangerous that there isn't a, you know, more dangerous, I guess, because the FBI is already considering groups like QAnon to be a possible domestic terror issue.
Right.
What I think is even more dangerous is that we are now going to have the different Q factions that exist. And what I mean by different Q factions is I mean not all QAnon followers believe that believe that JFK Jr. is indeed still alive and secretly waiting to come out to be Donald Trump's running mate for 2020. But what we're going to see is that the JFK Jr. QAnon people are going to suddenly have their own Q. Some sort of grifter that goes, hey, there's an opening here. And then some other side faction of QAnon is going to find their own grifter and so forth and so forth. And you're going to then have like sort of like I guess how you have numerous different Al-Qaeda subgroups. You're going to have sub QAnon groups.
Yes.
Some more dangerous than others.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very likely true. I mean, the way I think of it, it's like there was this famous psychiatrist who studied psychosis and like he had three patients that all claimed they were Napoleon. He brought them together and he's like, okay, what's going to happen? And then maybe this will get them out of it. And they're all like, no, he's the pretender. I'm the real Napoleon. This doesn't disprove anything, right? Which is like classic Q, where there was already great Time, a journalist from Time, I believe, reported like he found who it was. He found like the grifter on YouTube who was essentially Q, who had taken over the trip code. And at the beginning, when I was monitoring poll following this from the beginning, like there was this period where there were a few Qs, where just like anyone could post his Q essentially. And just this one opportunist kind of got the trip code, and they're still making money off of it. And the Time reporter kind of tracked just how he accidentally revealed himself as Q.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, you're exactly right. That what's going to happen is there's going to be more than one grifter, and they're all going to try and profit off of it at the same time. And the one guy who's got the trip code now is going to try and post whenever HN goes back up and there's going to be a false Q. I think it's not going away. Right. It'll fracture into like a beautiful kaleidoscope of stupidity rather than one central source.
Right. I mean, I gotta say, like, you know, with Gamergate, I sort of, during that time period, I was in the deep of it, covering it. I was on the list of people they hated and went after. God. And I got to tell you that, you know, I sort of saw what was coming with Gamergate and I was telling people about it. And, you know, people come to me now and say, oh, you saw what was going on and we thought it was just silly gamer stuff. But and I'm not saying this now to just pat myself on the back, but I'm bringing it up because with QAnon, I was also, you know, early to that. But I got to tell you, I'm not Nostradamus when it comes to QAnon. I don't think anyone was, but especially with QAnon, listen, I thought it would be something probably bigger than Pizzagate because it sort of was, it felt like an incubator for all these sort of crazy conspiracies. Like Pizzagate died because it was too specific, but Pizzagate could live on as part of the larger QAnon sort of canon, I guess. You know, QAnon is sort of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe of conspiracy theories. Like all the new conspiracy theories now live under Q, and because Q lives on and continues growing, all these conspiracies could exist as part of it. Like the JFK Jr. thing would have been just a crazy, you know, thing that a couple, you know, maybe a couple hundred, maybe a few thousand Alex Jones listeners would believe in. But it's something much bigger under QAnon as part of something bigger. And, you know, if I, you were to tell me, hey, approximately 50% of all boomers in the United States are probably going to end up believing in QAnon, I would tell you, you're out of your mind. What the hell are you talking about? That's definitely not the regular audience for internet conspiracy. But here we are. Here we are. I mean, it's...
Yeah. I mean, it's the classic. When I speak to Trump supporters at rallies, I went to the far right, to cover the far right rally in D.C. when Yiannopoulos appeared and McGinnis. And I spoke to people who are just Trump supporters, and it's the same. You know, they don't really think a lot about it, but they're like, I want my side to be true. I want Trump to be the true outsider to come in and break this thing and break politics. And they really want to believe it, and they're not really critical about it. And that fantasy through QAnon has just brought in so many older people who are not particularly savvy in that way. I wouldn't be surprised if it just keeps growing. Yeah, it's crazy.
Right, right. Dale Baran, author of It Came From Something Awful, How a Toxic Troll Army Accidentally Memed Donald Trump into Office. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. This has been really great.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Thanks so much for having us. A great talk.
Where can people go online to find out more about, you know, to follow your work and find out more about your work?
My Twitter, Dale Baran, is my handle. Or I have a Medium page, or DaleBaran.com is my website. So either one is perfectly fine.
There we go. Dale, take care. Hope you come on the show again.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Anytime.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, folks, that was a lot of fun because that's my wheelhouse. You guys all know that. Let's go to the second half of the show. Wait, hold on. Let me just, there's two comments I wanted to bring up here in the first half really quick. Rubix88 over on Periscope says, don't blame boomers, tired of grouping everyone and hating them. I mean, I clearly know it's not all boomers, but I mean, to say... not all boomers to me is to say not all men. Like, you know, I'm not talking about all boomers. I'm talking about a very specific subset of boomers that unfortunately do give boomers a bad rap, but clearly not all boomers. Just like when we say something about men and, for example, toxic masculinity, it's not all men, but it's a very significant grouping of men that ruin it for all men. That's what I mean when I bring up boomers. Let's not do the not all boomers. And then Grim, who I love, listener of the show, brought up how, 4chan is just like 8chan. And it's not. And I know it's not a good place, but it's not an 8chan. And you need to understand these distinctions to really, if you really want to get down to the root of each of these things. You know, 4chan... came in a world where trolling and shitposting was trolling and shitposting, and there wasn't this sort of right-wing reactionary link to it. Were there probably, were there for sure right-wing reactionaries and assholes and extremists doing the shitposting? Yes, but it was trolling in the sense that there was no real harm. It was the dumb shit you do online. Like, Rick Rowling. And, you know, I always bring up the fact that the Habbo Hotel pool incident. If you guys remember, there was this game back in the day called Habbo Hotel with 2D sprites that basically, you know, you sort of live your life. I don't recall exactly how the game went, but it was sort of like, I guess, like a 2D Sims, to really summarize it for lay people. And one of the racist troll moves in Habbo Hotel that the 4chaners put together to troll was they got a bunch of people to pick white avatars and then surround the pool in the game and not let people with brown and black avatars into the pool. Yes, it's racist. Yes, it's ridiculous. Yes, it's horrible. Yes, it's dumb. It's all those things. But it's also sort of that terrible, horrible trolling that, in the general sense, you know, did not commit any harm in the real world. No one was physically hurt by it. It did nothing to anyone offline. We can talk about, and I agree, that it, the fun of doing it indeed probably brought people into these beliefs further. But when we talk about racist trolling, that in a sense is, to me, the greatest example of the racist trolling of the old 4chan before they crossed the line. Before the Chans crossed the line and we got to where we are today. And so there is a distinction and there is a difference, and that's why I think it's important to understand the intricacies of these things. And that's, you know, the same reason why I think it's important to know the difference between an MRA and the MGTOWs and the PUAs. Because they're one and the same in many ways, but they're also very different in many other ways. And you need to understand which groups went where and which groups radicalized what and who could possibly be brought out of this and who are the true believers. That's all. That's the difference. That's why I bring it up. All right, ladies and gentlemen. To support this show, go to patreon.com/mattbinder. Listen, we really need to grow the show. I can't grow the show if we don't get more patrons. It's that simple. And if you like what you hear and you would like this content to get some more ears and eyes and you want me to be able to do additional content and you're not already supporting the show and you could afford to do so, most importantly, you got to say to yourself, hey, maybe now is the time to become a member. I asked for $5. You can give less. You can give more. But I asked for $5. And, you know, that way we can do more stuff. I mean, last week I gave you guys 2 shows when we were covering both nights of the debate. I would like to be able to do more shows on a regular basis. I would like to be able to do YouTube-specific produced pieces. Can't do that right now because I don't got the time because I don't got the number of patrons to give me the time. So patreon.com/mattbinder. And I would like to shout out to people right now who make this show possible. Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew H, Ari R, Benji, Bobby M, Champagne Kami, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Dakota R, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, David HZ, Dragon Slayer, Floaties, Froz K, FTW All Day, Greg D, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jonathan B, Joseph R, Katie S, Cats, Kyle, Lisa D, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Dank, Nicole A, Namde Net, Romina O, Ryan Left Is Best, Scott R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamni G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Will P, Utopian, and Zarin. You can also support this show one-off with a one-off donation. If you're watching the live stream, just give us a super chat. We got super chat enabled. You could also use that super chat to promote whatever comment you want. I'll read it first thing in the second half of the show. If you cannot afford to become a patron or give a one-off, what you can do is help spread the word of this show. Tell your friends about it. Tell your acquaintances about it. Tell your mom, your dad, your family members about it. Subscribe on iTunes if you're a podcast listener, or subscribe on YouTube if you're a YouTube listener. You know what? If you're not a podcast listener, subscribe on iTunes. And if you're not a YouTube listener, watcher, subscribe on YouTube. get those numbers up, get people to know that this is a show people watch and listen to. Leave a review on iTunes, leave a review on Google Play, or wherever you listen to the show. Really, I want to say again, subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/MattBinder. Also, follow me on Twitter, @MattBinder. Follow me on Instagram, MattBinder. I barely use Instagram, but if you start following me there, I'll start using it. Search MattBinder and like my Facebook page. And I think that's that. I think I got it all. DoomedPod.com for the podcast. That's the show. See you in the second half of the program for Patreon subscribers. You will catch me all next time on Doomed. Hey, kids on the right and left, do you feel dispossessed? If you're on the left or right, I'll feel your pain tonight. So shake off reality, it's easy as you please. Soon everyone is dancing conspiratorially. It's a paranoid style.